o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, it's Mic Check Friday with the Occupy News, local and global. I'm Gwen Berry. I'm in South Florida, and I'm part of a drumline of indie media, speaking truth to power. Today, I'm going to fill you in on local Occupy News and global that I've gathered, headlines that'll fuck you up. Today sees us on the brink of another war. How do we wage so much war so carelessly, I'm wondering. How did we elect the first African-American president completely owned by warmongering corporations? A man who exclaims his personal complicity in a kill list for drone attacks that have taken the lives of more innocents than anyone descriptively else. And I'm so ashamed now that I worked to elect such a person when it seems like yesterday I was so proud to. Things change and move that quickly today. Anyways, the news today is not so good for the economy because unemployment's up and the GOP is in party mode, thinking that's all they need to swing the presidential election. I'm going to play a little something here about kill lists from Dennis Traynor Jr. over at Acronym.
Do a little mind exercise. Imagine a spectrum running from left to right. On the extreme left, you've got, say, Gandhi, for example. And on the extreme right, imagine some cartoonish, fascistic leader ripped from the latest dystopian novella-turned-Hollywood blockbuster. Got it? Okay. Now label that spectrum Commander-in-Chief for the Global War on Terror. Finally, in your mind's eye, place two more people, Barack Obama and George W. Bush, on that spectrum. Surprise, surprise! W is closer to Gandhi and Obama is closer to being the president of dystopia land. Is this change that we can believe in? Today is Wednesday, May 30th, and you're watching Acronym because you stand for something. Imagine if John McCain had won the 2008 election and a New York Times article revealed that McCain was sitting in the Oval Office, lording over a collection of mugshots and bios, not unlike a baseball card collection or a high school yearbook, that amounted to a kill list, a list of targets, among them teenagers and several American citizens, that the president was personally signing off and ordering their execution. These subjects have been charged with no crime and would never receive a day in court, but with the stroke of a pen from the president, the most powerful military in the world would now draw a bullseye on your back where it would remain until you were pulverized and rendered food for worms. If those actions could be attributed to a President McCain, Nancy Pelosi would be bum-rushing every MSNBC talk show she can get herself on, apoplectic with indignation. Mike Myers would host a Saturday Night Live and do a rendition of McCain as Dr. Evil, and MoveOn.org would have the entire slacktivist universe signing e-petition after e-petition, and a few people might even take to the street. President McCain, however, is guilty of no such crime, but President Barack Obama is. Even the stunning May 29th New York Times report by Joe Becker and Scott Shane would surely have taken a more condemning tone had the president been a Republican. Instead, the report seems to credit Obama for finding gray areas and legal loopholes wherein he can twist rhetorical knots that both please the MoveOn.org crowd and leave room for him to act like a ganglord whose silent nod would send hitmen out into the night to snuff out a rival. These legal gray areas are so convoluted that the White House can claim that collateral deaths, or to put a finer point on it, innocent people killed by drone strikes in a country that has not attacked us and poses no threat to us, are in the single digits because Obama, the legal expert, has redefined combatant to mean any male of legal age within striking distance of the target. That means if Obama wants you dead and our drone strike kills you and the 10 people around you, whoosh, all of those corpses are classified as combatants and sleep tight with a clean conscience, y'all, because no innocent civilians died in the never-ending war on terror today. I can't wait to see the presidential debate on foreign policy. Romney is going to have to promise that the U.S. will save the world from the impending intergalactic invasion of the Transformers or go all DEFCON 5 to outdo Obama, who, on matters relating to the global war on terror, has mindfully charged well to the right of the homicidal idiot from Texas, whom we all thought was as bad as it could get. Hey folks, thank you very much for tuning in and sharing these videos. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook, links in the description. And I have been on hiatus, as some of you know, because I've been editing and working in post-production on this documentary. Link to the trailer here, and that is going to premiere in mid-June. Stay tuned for details. In the meantime, link to the trailer and share it with all your friends and all of your enemies.
Hey, that was Dennis Traynor Jr., and just look him up on video or on YouTube. He puts out great stuff, but he said it very well there. Looking over and following the social networks over in Journey for Roundtree 7 today, David Williams asked a question. He asked us, do you remember the yellow cake uranium that Saddam Hussein was buying from Nigeria to make nuclear bombs? Well, he wasn't. And anyway, it's Niger, not Nigeria. Remember the fantastic evidence proving he had weapons of mass destruction? The doctorate theses copied and pasted from the internet and sexed up by Downing Street? Well, of course, Saddam didn't have any of those WMDs. Remember all the oil-clogged birds shown to conjure up horrific images of animals affected by the Kuwaiti oil spill in the Gulf? It was taken in Alaska and was a victim of the Exxon Valdez disaster. Remember the, quote, evidence that Colonel Gaddafi's armed forces were strafing and bombing civilians? Well, they weren't, actually. And I'm no fan of Gaddafi. That's Gwen speaking, not David. And I quote, remember the photos of, quote, hundreds of thousands of Russians taking to the streets against Putin recently? Except they didn't. The real numbers were a few thousand. Many of them were paid. And the photos concerned were from the 1991 demonstrations against the dissolution of the USSR. Remember the photos of violence in Moscow? Except it wasn't. The pictures were from Greece, complete with the National Bank of Greece in the background in Greek. And that was an American news source. So what are your thoughts as to what's going on in Syria? David asks a really good question here. He says, real massacre of innocents by the Syrian government or another false flag? And there are a couple comments here. I think there's a bit more false flag to it than there could be. I also think that there is some bad shit going on in Syria. And Mike Stimson over at Roundtree 7, the Journey Room on Facebook, said that it was probably real. Bashar Assad is heir to the family's business of violent dictatorship, so I wouldn't put it past him. Better question, in my opinion, is why U.S. and allies are so selective in their outrage. And this is good stuff here. Israel has done horrific things in Gaza and the West Bank over the years, e.g. with Washington saying hardly a peep, and never, ever threatening military action. And I tell you, there are Israeli people, individuals, not talking about the conservatives who go after one little girl in the village square, but the actual majority of Israeli people who think just like Mr. Stimson here and wonder what the hell is going on with their country and how these conservatives have taken over and put them into the stance of warmongering. And on this same line of dialogue in the chat room over there, Al Osorio, or Oso, has actually said he echoes the selective outrage. From all he reads, there are significant resistance forces funded by U.S. and other sources want regime change, and there have been thousands of soldiers and police killed. So the fact that the regime hardlines to me isn't surprising. Worst part of this is the U.S. is not learning its lesson. It tipped over. You can fill in the blank there with a numerous collection of foreign governments and made things worse. I don't think the Russians or Chinese or pro-Assad, but both have enough geopolitical acumen to understand whoever would take over after Assad would quite likely be worse, certainly worse for the Syrian people following the current level of destabilization. And that destabilization is hitting the streets of America. Basically, today, as I said when I was introing into this show, we have some problems with sorry, the phone rang, people. Jeez, hey. What is it that Diane says? A kitchen production, kitchen table production. Anyways, yeah. We have an unemployment rate that's going up, not going down. The GOP is now seeing it as party time for Mittens Romney. Jeez. It's all a great tragedy. And at a time when the entire country is being tested by the, and here's some more news for y'all, entire country is being tested by the economic crisis. Some people are quite literally over there in Greece on the verge of destitution and hunger. We know this. We've seen the tragic news of suicides and such. They are empty of any, there's no cash in Greece right now, not from the on the government side, and they can't support the concept of a welfare state with frozen financing towards education and health, and the prison system could not be an exception. The financing for many prisons has decreased to a minimum for some months now, and it's resulting in hundreds of detainees becoming malnourished and surviving on the charity of local communities. That's pretty heavy, people. The latest example is the prison in Corinth, where after the supply stoppage from the nearby military camp, the prisoners are at the mercy of God because, as reported by prison staff, not even one grain of rice has been left in their warehouses. When a few days earlier, the commander of the camp announced to the prison management the transportation stoppage, citing lack of food supplies even for the soldiers, he shut down the last resource of supply for 84 prisoners. The response of some Cornish citizens was immediate, as they took it upon themselves to support the prisoners, since all protests to the justice ministry were fruitless. In the past few days, groups of Cornish residents have started collecting food as a small token of solidarity and respect to people who may be denied certain rights by justice, but not to their human dignity. The Cornish prison is in need of rice, pasta, frozen meat, and eggs. So if you go over to Occupy Earth, you'll find this story. You can find Occupy Earth online and on Facebook. And they are trying to logistically handle some, you know, charity and some supplies into Greece, not and into Corinth for this specific reason. This is, you know, this is just our basic humanity is beginning to get tested nationally from country to country. I think it's been tested for, you know, probably about 6,000 years, but it's really coming to the surface now, especially when you have so much, so very much instant access of information. Occupy the Home has been at work all month long for a few months. After 23 years of saving lives, paramedic, EMT, and DC Fire Department, Deborah Harris suffered a career-ending injury while she was on the job. These are our first responders. And she fell behind on her mortgage and worked to get it caught up and then ended up in foreclosure like so many people. This foreclosure thing, folks, is still going on. It's like the snowball rolling downhill, picking up more momentum. And just because the major media is not talking about it does not mean that it has gone away. So Monday, June 4th at 12 p.m., if anybody is in Washington or listening to this, this is the team at Occupy Our Homes in Washington, D.C., on June 4th at 12 p.m. at the Freddie Mac office, that's 325 7th Street Northwest, demanding, there's going to be a protest, demanding they desist in their eviction efforts for the Chase Bank to give Deborah Harris a loan modification that will allow her to keep her home. God, if we could get more people in the streets. People are doing what they can. I'm not one of these since I don't make it out that often myself. This is one of the major ways that I do what I can. But we need feet in the streets. You know, it just seems to get worse and worse. And yet, there's more and more silence from the media. And since Keith Olbermann's gone, Occupy's lost a great big voice and people that pay attention in droves. Anyway, so you're certainly not going to find it at current television. We get better information from Twitter than it seems Young Turks do anymore. And none of the other shows are really interested in what the protesters are doing unless there's big news in it for them. And that means, you know, problems with the local constabulary, the police departments, or Homeland Security, which I'm sure it's going to come to sooner or later. Okay, Occupy Los Angeles are occupying. Join L.A. in Occupy the Hood, Occupy Skid Row, and Occupy Los Angeles at Wilshire and Hope, 626 Wilshire Boulevard, and that's 8:30 p.m. tonight to fight gentrification and corrupt practices by the lobby group at Central City Association. They're asking folks to bring a tent. This is another attempt to create an occupation. So they're peacefully gathering to protest the economic development meeting in downtown 2020 plan to build new high-rises at the AEG Stadium and further criminalize and push out the homeless. The CCA is a localized manifestation and microcosm of everything wrong with the policy, the 1%, the obsession with wealth and prestige. What they're saying is that this is all about making money and further dejecting people who the worst end are homeless and people, the poor of the city, because they're going to be getting rid of a great deal of the lower rental neighborhoods, which, hey, there's a lot of us who can identify with the needs for, you know, getting themselves a safe home. Anyways, power is in numbers. Now, you can find Occupy LA and their events in Reoccupying on Facebook and also on Twitter at Occupy LA. Just tag in the hash mark, Occupy LA. Give them every kind of help that you can. Okay, today the news was broken that Riverdale residents blockade an Aqua America construction road. So there's a resistance going on, and they've sent this press release out. Save the Riverdale Mobile Home Park. This is in Pennsylvania. And if anybody up there is checking in here, you can find contact with them at saveriverdale@gmail.com and talk to Alex at 570-269-9589 or Deb Eck, who is a resident, at 570-772-3335. Okay, so the whole thing rests around the Piatt Township in Pennsylvania. Riverdale residents and supporters have blockaded access to a mobile home community that is facing imminent displacement at the hands of Aqua America, a major water withdrawal company that supplies natural gas drillers in the Marcellus Shale region. Approximately 30 residents and allies are currently blockading entrance roads to the community. Supporters have also placed tired and wooden boards at the entrance, alongside banners reading, Aqua America kills community and we will fight for our homes. Basically, you have another case of eminent domain trying to be applied to oust people from the homes that that's their sacred space. This is ridiculous. It's just all over the country. Please remember that this Sunday on the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and myself, we have Texas farmer Julia Trigg Crawford on with us, who is fighting the tar sands corporations in Alberta over the eminent domain being placed on her farm so that they can run pipeline through her land. Please remember and tune in. It's going to be a good show. We will take some calls on the end of it. And I also have the General Assembly meeting for, this is local Occupy News, our General Assembly here in Occupy Palm Beach County will be meeting, as usual, on Saturday morning between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. back at the Cultural Plaza between Lake and Lucerne, off of what we all know is actually Federal Highway, but Route 5 up here in the northern Regis. Please remember, please attend. That's between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. in the Cultural Plaza. That's where the city building, the annex, is. It's really beautiful. It's got all the old, wonderful, huge ficus trees everywhere. So please remember, please attend. I have things loaded up here on my line. We've already gone through the Occupy Wall Street. Larger news is Los Angeles to join the seven-day siege that's planned. Yesterday, 14 were arrested at Cruz home, vowing needless foreclosure stops here. Again, we're talking about Occupy homes, but this time in Minnesota. Today at 2 p.m., which was an hour ago, a one-month anniversary of the 24/7 eviction blockade at the Cruz family home, Freddie Mac, PNC Bank, Mayor Ryback all have a choice to make, waste more city resources arresting peaceful protesters or work to keep the Cruz family in their home. There are lots of occupiers still here. You know, they're not getting any kind of coverage in the mainstream media, and that's what little guys like me is about. I would remind you at this time, because I'm nearing the end of my footage here, I would remind you that tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to go on over to the Wild Wild Left with Diane G. She is going to be talking it up about kill lists and the zombie apocalypse that's happening right before our very eyes in politics right now. But I think she's basically going to be sticking to the subject of Obama's kill list, which ought to be a real goodie. So don't miss Diane G. over at the Wild Wild Left. Also on Sunday at 7 p.m. following us is Progressive News Network with Rick Spezak, and he has a panel on. I'll be a part of that, so please tune in. And back over here, I'd like you to hear another piece from, you know, Dennis Traynor Jr. is a photographer, a filmmaker. He has an acronym now over on YouTube. He makes wonderful activist videos, and he's about to release a chronological film on the American Fall and Occupy movement here. A film. So listen, get on over to Dennis's and on YouTube or Facebook, just check him out. He's got a lot to say. We're going to give Dennis another chance here to talk about.
This morning, a federal appeals court in Boston ruled that the 1996 law that defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman, the Defense of Marriage Act, is unconstitutional because it deprives gay couples the rights and privileges granted to heterosexual couples. Oh, how I do enjoy the culture wars where victories mean we don't have to actually kill people like in actual wars. We just get to kill knuckle-dragging regressive ideas. It's Thursday, May 31st, and you're watching Acronym because you stand for something. You may be among the minority of people who feels that marriage, as legally defined, should consist of a union between a man and a woman only. But public opinion is shifting so fast on this issue that soon enough, you'll be forced into the closet with your views. And in the closet, you can stay. If it gets too lonely in the closet, you might occasionally venture out under the cover of night, where maybe you can cruise the park and find other hate mongers to commiserate with. And the anonymous, fleeting nature of your exchange might save you from the ridicule of your peers, who have jumped onto the wave of progress and are threatened not by the intimate acts and lifelong commitments between consenting adults. If your argument for denying rights to homosexuals rests on any scholarship, italics mine, found in a book of laws written by an all-knowing creator of the universe, then fine. Bully for you, I'm sure there's a club of like-minded people in your neighborhood where a man in a dress who has taken a vow of celibacy, altar boys don't count, will join you and yours in holy matrimony, and that's just fine. Nobody is taking that blessed event away from you. But after you do your thing in the church, it isn't legal until you go to court and you sign a contract. Now, the argument that Adam and Steve can be openly and legally married will somehow tarnish the integrity of their neighbors. Heterosexual marriage is part of a broader picture wherein people cling to an idealized picture of the world that recalls Norman Rockwell, Leave It to Beaver, and a smell of mothballs. It was a simpler time, right before the first season of Mad Men, where women did what they were told, men did whatever they want, and gay people did their best to become invisible. Sure, some of us had an Aunt Edna who moved away and lived with her friend Alice. But they never went anywhere as a couple, did they? There are many who were killed because they were gay. Matthew Shepard was beaten, tortured, and strung up on a fence and left there to die because a real man was so enraged that Matthew was gay. The defenders of the Defenders of the Marriage Act may never give physical agency to that kind of rage, but their brand of hatred springs from the same putrid, poisoned well. If you're infected with this rage, if you are foolish enough to defend the Defense of Marriage Act, my advice to you is to keep it in the closet, bitch. And sharing these videos with your friends. Put them on Facebook, Twitter, and follow me at Facebook and Twitter at Dennis Traynor Jr. A random person selected from the next person who follows me on one of those social networking sites will win $1 million. That last part was a lie.
You gotta love him, right? He's so good. And I wanted to bring up, I found posted by Tisha Miller over in Journey for Roundtree 7, this wonderful site. It's called the International Organization for a Participatory Society, IOPS. It is a revolutionary organization that aims to win a better world through flexibility, exploring and advocating long-term vision, building the seeds of the future in the present, empowering the lives of its members, organizing in an internally classless and self-managing way, and winning changes in society that better the situations of suffering constituencies while also laying the groundwork for more changes and constructions to come. They look like a very good group. Just to give you a couple of key goals and priorities right off of their site here is why I am mentioning them and that kind of boring blasé kind of intro they have. It's because IOPS is an anti-capitalist, anti-racist, anti-sexist, and anti-authoritarian group. It centrally addresses economics and class, politics, culture, race, kinship, gender, ecology, and international relations without privileging any one focus above the rest. And that alone, I think, puts it in a category that is very, very small on the planet right now. IOPS seeks to transcend 20th century market and centrally planned socialism with a new participatory society or participatory socialism that combines classless participatory economy, feminist participatory kinship, intercommunalist participatory culture, and self-managing participatory policy. Are there any fucking one of you to get back here and say that one again? Whew. IOPS flexibly explores and advocates long-term vision sufficiently to inspire and orient current activity, but does not advocate or seek to implement detailed blueprints that transcend movement needs and knowledge. They see a social strategy, and especially tactics, as largely contingent on place and time, and therefore continually revises shared views in light of new evidence, including regularly updated analysis, vision, and strategy. They sound like a really good group. I'm advocating, listening in, and seeing what they're about and taking a look at them. I think they're going to become a part of Change for the Good. And I've got just enough time here to give you a little for our sponsor.
Hi, this is Gwen. I'm here to remind you that Here Be Monsters and all of our shows are sponsored by Roundtree 7, that's the number 7.com, a blog with a bunch of wonderful writers that are bringing knowledge to the social consciousness. That's Roundtree 7, the number 7.com. And thank you guys for being there.
And with that, I would also add that we are sponsored by Daughters of Isis, the Ancestral Room Ecology, and you can find links on our show page to both of these wonderful destinations online. Take yourself there. That's it. That's about what I got for you this week on Friday. Mic check. I would remind you once again to take advantage of Blog Talk Radio this afternoon and get on over to Diane G's Wild, Wild Left. She'll be on at 6 p.m. And Sunday, take a 6 p.m. cruise over to us again on Sunday, where Julia Trigg Crawford, the farmer who is going to battle in court with the tar sands pipeline company out of Alberta. And I'm sorry, my notes are bad today. I didn't have that one written down. She'll be with us for the full hour, Jack and I. So thanks for tuning in. And to all of my East Coaster friends here in the subtropics and the tropics, I welcome you and I and all of us to the 2012 mean season. Today opens hurricane season, so people be safe out there. And remember, if the storm is a-coming, batten down the hatches. Anyways, that's it for today. This has been Mike Check, Friday Mike Check with Gwendolyn Berry here in South Florida. And I thank you so much for tuning in to listen or coming back and getting us in the archives, however you do. Thank you for being with us. And that's it, babe.